Dear listeners, welcome to Faces of Digital Health, a podcast about digital health and how healthcare systems adopt technologies. My name is Tiasza Zajc, and this is the first part of a short series about healthcare and digital health in Africa, a similar project as was the series about digital health in Asia, published in August this year. Africa has 54 countries that differ a lot in terms of their quality of medical care, political situation, and innovation. You will be able to listen to speakers from the most populous country, Nigeria, with 200 million people, which is presented by a medical doctor and entrepreneur Okoche Obenji, CEO of Nimedix Ecosystem.
In Nigeria, most startups I know of are offering telemedicine services, which in my opinion will not be very, very effective. It will not be effective despite smartphone penetration and technology penetration generally. You go to very deep villages, you have mobile phone networks. Telemedicine will still not suffice for a nation like Nigeria for so many reasons. People still believe in the face-to-face contact system. They want to see a doctor. In the Western society, you find more challenges with non-communicable diseases, chronic diseases like diabetes, hypertension. But in contrast, back here, you are dealing with conditions like tuberculosis and a whole lot of other communicable diseases. So you actually need to see doctors. And these doctors are in short supply. So telemedicine is not enough.
South Africa, with 59 million people, is presented by a serial entrepreneur Sharan Amot, currently the CEO of Recomed, South Africa's largest doctor's appointments booking platform.
In the private sector, you can pay and receive care. And you have this huge disparity between the private sector and the public sector. So if we take South Africa, for example, there's 59 million people or approximately in the country, of which just under 9 million have access to private healthcare. So that means there's more than 50 million who don't have access to private healthcare. So I believe that those 9 million, if you pay, can get access reasonably quickly. But in the public sector, things are a lot worse. What is currently dominating the healthcare agenda is this concept of national health insurance, the NHI. And it has been approved, but we are figuring out how to implement it as a society over the next 10 years. And that is really about every citizen, private or public, contributing to a public fund that'll give the whole population access to the same healthcare system.
I also talked about Rwanda, a country with 12.6 million people and less than 700 doctors, with Patrick Singa Muhoza, Chief Medical Officer of Babel, the Rwandan version of the UK company Babylon, offering online and phone consultations with doctors.
In Rwanda, the Ministry of Health has also been trying different approaches. Some of them are telehealth models, connecting specialist doctors with other doctors, in essence connecting health professionals and health professionals. There have been attempts to program to do with precision surgery at the King Faisal Medicine. The ministry is also considering different approaches to link health facilities, health centers with community health workers. And there are also many apps that are being built, not by the ministry, but by individuals in Rwanda. Most of them are addressing one particular issue of healthcare. Most of them are disease specific. I know of an app that is aiming at addressing the issue to do with diabetes management. There is another app that is trying to fix the issue of appointment management. And actually, the King Faisal Hospital has an app that is doing exactly that. Babo is, to the best of my knowledge, is the only app out there that is addressing mostly primary healthcare issues.
In this first episode, you will hear about Tanzania, which has 58 million people. At the XMOMED conference in Berlin, I talked to Maria Teresa Samson Kaduchi, an ICT specialist and a very inspiring entrepreneur with rich experience running a tech company in Africa while participating in country-level initiatives reforming communities. Maria Teresa is also assisting small businesses, corporate companies and investors flourish. At the moment, she is fully engaged in building MFIA, a company trying to increase access to accurate medical information in Africa. She explained the current state of healthcare in Tanzania and the challenges women face as entrepreneurs and seekers of medical information and help. You will be surprised. A recap of the show with information about other episodes will be published on our website www.facesofdigitalhealth.com, where you can also find all the info about the Dimension series about Asia. Now, let's fly to Tanzania. So, Maria Teresa, before we dive into MAFIA, let's talk a little bit about Tanzania. If I wanted to travel there, what would you recommend to see? How would you describe the country?
I would describe the country as one of the most beautiful places I have been to. And I have been to several countries, both in Africa and out of Africa. But it's very peaceful. It's a very good environment to see. There's so much nature. And if there's one thing that I would recommend, is I would recommend you to go to the northern region and to visit Mount Kilimanjaro, or where Mount Kilimanjaro is. But also there are lots of national parks around the region that are very beautiful, like Serengeti, going to the Great Migration in Serengeti. And recently, the Ministry of Tourism has started a campaign called Twenzetu Kileleni, which means let's go to the peak of Kilimanjaro, which is both healthy-wise, so they're encouraging people to exercise and to take the challenge for healthy-wise, but also for tourism. So it's one of the places that I would recommend. It's really, really beautiful.
Healthcare-wise, Tanzania has various problems with communicable diseases. It has one of the highest prevalence with HIV and AIDS. So how would you characterize the healthcare system?
As any African country or developing countries, healthcare sector is one of the sectors that are still growing and improving. And I think it's the same case for Tanzania. And when I look back at where we were and where we are now, especially with making healthcare services digital, with records, with service providing, with also using, for example, internet or having projects that connect doctors abroad or out of Tanzania with the ones in Tanzania in performing operations and other services, I think we've made major steps. But yes, communicable diseases is still a very big problem. This is also the reason why we do our work, because information, it's very hard to cut information across, and also preventive measures. So applying preventive measures and getting people to understand what it takes to stay safe or not to contact diseases has been a challenge. So there have been improvements on how the services are rendered after people are affected, but there's still a lot of work to do in raising awareness, but also educating majority of people. Same with HIV. We've made steps, but it's still for cultural reason, but also illiteracy, and literacy not having basic understanding of how to read and write, but having the basic health understanding. Majority of people lack that.
When you say cultural differences and specifics, what do you mean by that when it comes to, you know, healthcare education?
Because, for example, there are certain cultures who, I mean, they already have their own traditions and how, for example, they handle adolescent health, what they teach to young girls, how they separate young girls and young boys, and the information that they give them, which is really based on myths and misconceptions. But these traditions are very deeply rooted, so it's very hard to get rid of them. And now they build young people, a generation of young people that is very unaware or that has incorrect or that is very misinformed. And getting rid of that also becomes a challenge, especially with sexual health and reproductive health.
When it comes to AIDS, the good news in not so long ago has been the existence of PrEP, which is a medication that can prevent it. And the prices of PrEP in the US have been a broad discussion, because as many other medications in the US, the prices are really, really too high. But given that how big issue HIV is in Tanzania, Do you know, are there already any discussions about these medications? Also in respect to the fact that one of the problems of the healthcare system in Tanzania is that pharmacies tend to run out of stock, especially if they're outside of big cities.
Yes, so there is already a conversation around PrEP, but for PrEP, there's already a type of PrEP that is already given in public hospitals. So you'll have to, or if you think or you doubt that you might have contacted AIDS, you have to go to a public hospital and take the medication from there. And I think it's 3 doses or 3 times you have to go, but it's already administered in some of the public hospitals. But there are already discussions to make this a nationwide service and that so that to reach everyone. Yeah, I think around PrEP, that is the standards I know it so far.
Now let's talk a little bit more about your latest project, and that is MAFIA, which in translation means mobile health. And if I understood correctly, you're providing content in Swahili because a lot of people speak Swahili and don't speak English. And that's how you spread information. So can you tell me a little bit on what kind of content do you focus on?
MAFIA is a USSD application, which means it works in both feature phones or phones that don't have connection, internet connection, and also works with smartphone. And what we do is we provide basic health information to Swahili-speaking countries. And we have started in Tanzania, but we have plans to expand in Kenya and Uganda and other countries in East Africa. But the content that we are focusing on is basic health information. So information like communicable diseases. And in communicable diseases, for example, symptoms of some of the diseases. For example, cholera. Cholera kills hundreds of thousands of people every year in the world. And it's a very easy to prevent disease. So at least it's very easy to prevent the death that occur from cholera. So we tell people the symptoms of cholera and we tell people what to do next when they're noticing those symptoms, but also where to get help once they have those symptoms. And also through text messages, we tell our users how bad it is. So with certain communicable diseases, for example, cholera can kill you in a matter of hours because of dehydration. And there's other diseases, for example, non-communicable with malaria, maybe you have more time than in some diseases. So spreading that kind of information, but also non-communicable diseases. Because, for example, all the cancer cases that are treated in Tanzania, 90% of them have been noticed at the late stages. So stage 4 or further, at a very critical stage where nothing can be done. And I think with information, for example, with breast cancer, how to self-examine yourself, with prostate cancer, with also symptoms or what to do when you see that you have a tumor or growing, that maybe it's better to go to the hospital. So giving that kind of information to people is what we're focusing on. But also our second focus is in sexual reproductive health, focusing in maternal health, especially telling women about the stages of pregnancies, what they are, I mean, the diet that they are advised to take, the importance of going to the hospital frequently to keep checking and keep track of their pregnancies. And apart from maternal health, but also menstrual health. So we have developed an algorithm with menstrual health where without internet, you can still track your period. And this is very important for Tanzania because of the number of early or teen pregnancies, and usually happening because young people start engaging in sex without having sex education and they end up pregnant. So we want to give this information to girls. We want them to know about their fertility window, when they can possibly get pregnant, and for them to make informed decisions when they want to engage in sex or not.
So how do you reach people in the first place? Because a lot of people still get their information through radio, and there's still a gap between demographics and regions that have access to modern information and communications technologies and those that don't have that access.
We have created USSD to close that gap because we are aware that there's a very big digital gap, and using, for example, online channels or any channel that requires internet will not work because of that gap. So we have gone back to the basics. We've gone back to what has worked in Africa before. Innovation around USSD, especially in fintech, has created a very transformative era in Africa. So we have a proof of concept, and we decided to go back to the basic, to go back to what people are already aware of. People already understand how USSD works. The technologies that we use, the same as mobile wallets, M-Pesa, that protocol is called USSD, and we're using the same protocol.
That also works on regular phones, not smartphones.
Yes.
So you obtain authorization through basically SMSs with a code.
Yes, so someone dials a code, they get a menu, they choose from a menu what they want to learn, they get text messages, they can ask for the information, but it's very basic. So it does not require education or higher education, just requires someone to know how to read and write. It having been existing for more than 10 years, so it's very traditional and it has penetrated well. And we want to capitalize on that. So we're reaching people through mobile phones, through what they already have, and we are building up on that. We are going to, from January, we're starting with very basic marketing. So going to villages, going to rural areas, going to places where most people are universities, college, education centers, and speaking about our work, but also using radio, because radio has penetrated. So that is also one of our marketing channels and how we're going to reach more people. And from research and from our beta testing, we know for sure that it works.
How long has MFA been in existence?
Since the research phase, so we started the research phase 2 years and 8 months ago. And actually the project with street kids that I was doing a study on was one that built the first interest for me to start studying and researching on reproductive health, which led into further studies on where people obtain information in general. And we came to find out that there's nowhere that anyone in Tanzania can actually obtain health information apart from hospitals. And to go to a hospital, people usually go after they're sick or after they have fallen victim of something. Then from then we studied more on what we can do about it, and we feel that it shouldn't be this way. There should be channels of information with preventive measures and preventive health. And with mobile technology, we can start building on digital health, especially for the public.
So what kind of feedback do you get when you're, you know, on the ground trying to explain to people what your solution does?
So far, it's excitement, people wanting to know when are we going to start or launch or when they can access it. A lot of people have been telling us about the misconception or the information that they have, which is not true or is incorrect or is inaccurate or not enough.
Can you maybe mention an example of misconceptions that are out there?
So I think the biggest, the most surprising misconception that we have gotten so far is around menstrual health. Because first, female health or health around a woman, it's something that has a lot of taboos around and it's very private. So people don't actually talk about them. And you have older people who are like aunties or grandparents who, because of experience or being women themselves, have created their own understanding of what menstrual health is, and also men, what they understand. So for example, they say menstruation or period, that time is when a woman body cleanses itself. A woman body is usually very dirty, and because of also some traditional beliefs is that, I don't know, it has just natural darts and from demons and stuff, and every month it has to cleanse itself. So at that time, a man should never touch a woman. In some communities, a woman is separated from other people because they believe she's dirty, she's not clean, and just having to learn. And we meet people who actually believe in these things, like this is what they think and they believe menstruation is.
Did you encounter any negative feedback in the sense that somebody would be appalled by what you're trying to convince them because of their firm beliefs?
Not really, because when we go with medical professionals, so we work with medical professionals, some of the founding members of the team are medical doctors already. And usually when you go to a community, especially to people who are not as educated and people who do not access health services as frequently, and you say you're a doctor, they sort of believe that you will know what you're talking about and that you're right. And things like that. So not really opposition, but a lot of questions, a lot of curiosity, but also a lot of concerns, sometimes concerns from women that what if my husband finds out that I'm looking for information about family planning, for example, because in many African communities, men control or make that decision whether to have children or not. And the concept of family planning sometimes do not work very well with men because it gives power to the women to decide if they want to have children or not. And we have had several times concerns from women that what if my husband sees messages from my phone? What if he can see what I'm looking for? For example, for people who are married also, when someone is looking for information about sexual transmitted diseases or information about HIV, it might mean that maybe they're engaged outside their marriage or they have other companionship, and this is why they're concerned about these diseases.
How do you respond to concerns like that?
When we were building this, after research, we knew of these concerns even before. We knew that privacy is very different. I think privacy here in Europe is more about personal data and who has it and how are they going to use it. But back in Africa, privacy means that how can I keep whatever I'm doing to myself and not people around me, like not allow access to people around me. And because the thoughts from the beginning, we had that thought, and this is also why we opted for interactive session, because you're getting the message right after you finish selecting what you want to learn about, and you can read right at that instant and delete that message without a trace. And that is how so far we have developed it, to keep it private and to keep also our users safe.
I couldn't help but notice that the whole team of Mafia is women only. Is that by design?
Actually not, but we love it that way and we'd love to keep it that way. It's not. But so far when we started in the beginning, in the research phase, it was easy to get support of women. They could understand this because also the lack of information, health information, impacts women even more. So I come from a family of girls only, 6 girls in my family, and I have seen it from myself to my sisters, my baby sisters, all of them, the struggle to get information, the struggle to make decisions as a woman, to know what really you can go for when you're studying or when you're growing up, when you're starting to engage in sexual relationship. Where do you get the information to guide you? Because you're not taught at school, or at school you're taught in a very private manner, because also the teachers do not want to dive deep into these subjects for religious reason, for traditional reason, or they just don't feel comfortable to. You're not taught at home because no one talks about these things. They're a very high taboo. So you find yourself going into the world not having any understanding. And for me, having to leave that myself and having to also see the same struggle years after with my sisters, up to 10 years after I was a young girl, made me really believe that this is a very big challenge. And I think also for the team, because they could relate more with the problem than men.
And polygamy is still quite often, right? I mean, a man can have more wives.
Yes, some tribes allow it, but also the Islam religion allows it. And in Tanzania, it's 50-50, Christians and Muslims. So we have a number of polygamy relationships, and it's not a strange thing. So it's some kind of a normal lifestyle.
You travel a lot. You have a lot of international experiences. So I'm really wondering what it's like to be a woman entrepreneur in Africa, where apart from all the things that you mentioned, women in many rural communities are being denied the right to own or inherit land or properties. And on the same position, women tend to earn less money than men. Only 22% of women against 78% of men are represented in senior levels. You have to be tough.
You have to be tough. There's no any other option, and it's not easy. It's really challenging. It's hard, but also working in a patriarchal structure, because back in Tanzania, yes, when I travel, for example, when I'm here in Germany, it's very different and you get a lot of support and a lot of acceptance. But going back home and going back to this already very old existing structure where almost every field is male dominated, and also being women working in a science field, because we are women in medical and technology backgrounds, and having to build something like this, which has never been done before, and having also still being women, having to work to penetrate in the market, to get the support both from public and private sector, it is very challenging. And you have to prove yourself a lot. And I think this is something that men or male colleagues don't have to do, or don't have to do as much as we need to do. Because just to get the space of being listened to, you have to prove so much that you're worth it, that you have to bring all your credentials, you have to bring all your recognition, you have to work on making sure that you can get in the door. And that has not been easy, and it has been very, very challenging. But I think it needs to be done. And how we feel in our team is that it needs to be done. It needs someone to be tough enough to persevere, because the young ones or young females in Tanzania and in Africa need role models. They need people to look up to, people who have done this kind of things before, people who have created solutions in the tech space, which is very dominated by men, women who have been able to somehow succeed in that. I think it's important because it's also an encouragement to the next generation, or for women who are looking at either science or medicine or engineering or technology as an option. There must be someone who has been able to do it for them to really to be confident that they can also do it. And also for this reason, being a team of women only, and each one of us struggling in their fields and really struggling to move forward, and not only struggling but having to really work hard, because you feel it that you have to work harder, you have to give 5 times, sometimes up to 10 times more than what others have to give to be in the same position. But we feel that it's important. We feel that it needs to be done, and it must be done, and we're the one to do it.
How do you tackle funding for the things that you do? So, because in general, all over the world, women founders have a harder time than male founders to get funding and investors. And then you're a woman in Africa, and Africa is, the prices are lower than when you have apps, and there's less interest from outside investors to put money in solutions here. So who actually do you turn to? Do you work a lot with foundations such as Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is pretty active in the area?
Yeah, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is really active, and I think in the areas of healthcare services and vaccination, they have done so much commendable work, and it's really amazing what they're doing. They're doing more work with healthcare providers, and I think they have transformed Tanzania with the funding that they're putting in. But as for startups and as startups in digital health, because it's still a very new subject, and we are now working to improve healthcare providers. And for example, the MSD, the Medical Supply Agency of Tanzania, have just gone digital, and now they can track the supply, and they can track the number of medication they have, the need, which is bringing a lot of changes on how, in the service that they're rendering. With what we're doing, maybe we're now creating space for foundations to become more interested with startup in the health sector, because you also don't have many startups in the health sector that are doing what we're doing. And I think for that reason, before, foundations were focusing in already existing institutions and like hospitals and health centers. And I think they can play a very big role, because funding in Africa is still a very, very big challenge, and access to funds is nearly impossible for a startup. So I think we've made major steps when it comes to microfinancing, or to small SMEs, small businesses. Businesses that need $500, $1,000, maximum $2,000. There are a lot of organizations that are already working on that, on empowering women to start small businesses. But when it comes to startup, or people who are working in innovation, in creating solutions, who do not need microloans but needs investment or substantial amount of loans, we're still far behind. So if I have to I mean, if there's one call of action, I would say to foundations and organizations to also start looking at that space. And when they give out grants, to also consider startups, because sometimes grants are very designed in a way that you cannot even apply because you don't fit the criteria and stuff. Yeah.
You've been listening to Faces of Digital Health. If you like the show, do leave a rating or a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Also, get in touch via Twitter, where you can find me under @ZAJC TJASA, or visit our website www.facesofdigitalhealth.com to check out other episodes and series as well. Stay tuned.